Super. Welcome. Welcome to this lecture from, I have to look up here because it's Nika, I know. Nika, I hope I pronounce your name right. It's Dubrovsky. Nika Dubrovsky is born in the USSR. I think it was USSR at the time. Yes, still. So not the Soviet Union, but the USSR. And she moved over to New York, I understood. And then last 6 years living in Berlin. She's an artist, and luckily artists make our life better and try to give certain color and feeling to this world. She's next to being an artist, she's in, engaged in projects like this one, Anthropology for Kids, and there is a project here that's going to be related in an open source book called What is Privacy? What is Privacy? I'm gonna give you the stage, I think, all right?
So I'm working on this project for a couple years already. Yeah, I'm very happy to be here, and I'm not an experienced speaker, so I'm nervous. And I'm going to describe this project and hopefully get some advice or maybe find your collaborators. So I started to work on this because I bought a book about pirates to my 6-year-old son who was learning to read. And I was hoping that it will be a dramatic book about first anarchistic communities with blood and all kind of amazing events. But it was quite opposite. It was a very close product, sugary and kitschy and completely like nothing true. So I was thinking, okay, actually it's really great to do books for kids, but books that will talk about what Dostoevsky calls curse questions, something that every human being have to decide for themselves, what is family, what is death, what is labor, or what is money, for example, and what is privacy as well. So, and then I started to do these books that I understand them like a social, hacking to the social courts, because when we get our education, and when I saw my son getting his education, we are presented with, again, this close products that then we have to rehearsal and repeat. And it's very rarely that the kids are, and adults as well, are allowed to really take apart the major important social ideas and then reconstruct them for themselves. And I want to say that one of the important influence for me was Soviet children literature in 1920s, and that was very important also for the beginning of construction of the revolutionary identity of Soviet people, because this identity of Soviet people didn't exist. So before 1937, the Stalin's crackdown, Soviet children literature was really, really progressive and has a lot of qualities that I think very important now. So the Anthropology for Kids is supposed to be a web project with freely downloading books that also we put on WikiEDU, WikiKids. And this is a doodle books that kids can draw and write in. So the anthropological idea that for each core question, like what is family, you can have many answers depending from which cultural background or historical time you come in. And in each of this question, the books is providing a framework where you can comment and draw and imagine and construct your own identity. So this is a book about history of protests. In Russian it's called history of justice, because it's not possible to
publish and to do workshops with the protest books right now. And so this is a story cases that describing a different type of protest. And one part of the page is always organized like a school book where the child can, but in this case not repeat, but comment. Then, like the book, the another book, one of the books that I'm doing is about privacy. That's why I'm having this conversations here. So this a different way of relating to the privacy. And now from my presentation, because the book is not finished yet, I'm going to share the ideas that I have about privacy now and that I'm collecting. So the privacy could be understood in many different ways, like level of access, exclusion, control over the body, home, public space, and so on. But it also could be described as privacy of the body and privacy inside of the public space. And the relationship between public and private is one of the most important and fascinating subjects for me. So we know that in Babylon, the privacy was a privilege. So only wealthy women were able to cover their face and their hands, and the prostitute or the poor woman actually were obliged to. To go out with their uncovered, it was big punishment for not following the rules. So in Saudi Arabia, is quite opposite. The appearances belong to the men, the appearance of the woman. So they must cover their face. And now in Europe, one country after another, the burqa is banned in order to. Protect women and protect our understanding of what privacy is. So privacy of others could become a problem for us. And this is a French beach. Last year, a woman who was wearing burkini on the beach in France, she was stopped by the armed police and was forced to undress because French government pass a law against wearing burkini. So this, like the privacy of others could be a threat, but could be understood as a threat as well. So this is a different way of relating to privacy, zapatistas. Balaclavas is kind of a sign that used to invite everybody to their struggle and to relate to them. It's also a very important tools that they use in order to be successful in their struggles with the government, because nobody actually can identify Subcomandante Marcos or Giuliana, because nobody can really prove who is he. One person or like, you know, somebody else. And this type of a relationship to the privacy is also allowing them to create a new collectivity that many people in the world can relate to. And this support that they got is also making them protected. So there's our Russian pussy rights, but like theatrical anonymity. These girls were, at least Nadia Talakonikova, Masha Alekhina, were very well known. Their faces and names was public. And then they started to use these balaclavas that mostly covered not them, but somebody else. So this is another way of related to privacy. If you show in a public space some parts that are considered to be private and forbidden, even then you really hack into the media. And by doing that, you can hack into the public space and deliver some agenda that would be difficult to do otherwise. And now, like, the big fashion industry is also kind of following this agenda, and it's a lot of projects that helping us or could help us if we want to control our visibility and to really change the way how we relate to our appearance on the fly, so we can change our gender or age or whatever we really want to change. So I grew up in Soviet Union, and of course it was the most important private-public relationship in this country. For example, the way how Soviet people look was very known, so we kind of were all very much the same. And if you see the foreigners in Leningrad, when I grew up, then they will like be the colorful people who immediately stick out in the crowd. We also, many people also lived in this famous communal apartments that they didn't choose their neighbors. It wasn't a Berlin Wage, it's a more or less some special way of being collective. And of course, we have a mass surveillance that now looks like very innocent because the government relied on their friends and neighbors telling on each other. And until certain moment, like when I grew up in 80s, that practice wasn't popular anymore. So some people are saying that Soviet Union was defeated by the citizens telling a joke about Soviet, to each other about Soviet regime. And of course, Lenin was our collective grandfather that always watch upon us. The important part of Soviet elite was an artist and a dissident who, how we know, very successfully fought for their artistic autonomy and against the forced collectivity. He is like very famous performance of Ivkovich in 1979. She's sitting on the balcony looking the Tito's parade and doing something very forbidden by being private in the public space. So this was a generation, dissidents and artists was a generation of my parents, and by the time I grow, they looked to me very heroic and important. And then when the post-socialism era came, then I kind of a little bit reconsider my position. So this is a performance of the artists in Moscow, just very close to mausoleum where the Lenin is still. So this is a cake, and the people who were invited to eat it was it was an art gallery, some private crowd, including some kids. So they successfully ate collective grandfather. And that's how, like, I think for me, it's like a very, very brutal and successful image of how the privatization actually happens in Soviet countries. So in this is how Leningrad looked in the 90s. A lot of the small places where the people sell each other everything. Total privatization. And like another good example of relationship between private and public was these two guys. So one of them on the left, his name is Mikhail Verbitsky. He's an author of a book called Anti-Copyright, where he explained first time in Russian language about Richard Stallman and GNU license and all of these important things. He's also a successful mathematician. He is making money going, working in Western universities, giving lectures. So the guy on the right, named Pugach, that's from Russian, you can translate like being scary. And he organized company called Beard LLC, in which the sole purpose of this company was carrying the rights for registered trademark on his beard, and he was suing other people of wearing a beard that he thinks looks like his. So this Verbitsky was one day stopped in the airport, and was because he has an open court case against him, and supposed to pay around $10,000 because he was announced that he violated a copyright of Mr. Pugach on the beard. And he like wrote on his blog, like, it looks like a joke, but it's actually not. And then he actually did pay to, I don't know if he succeeded later somehow, got out of that, but it was like a big deal. So, and I think what happens now with this like total privatization of our privacy everywhere is that it's again become a human rights issue, very much as it was during the Soviet time, but on a completely different scale. So Soviet times are really innocent and home-like, very cute even, especially the times when I grew up in the 80s. And what I'm thinking by doing these books is like how what could be done in order to prevent it from developing. And one of the things that I think is very important is to develop tools for kind of social hacking, organizing the social crypto parties with kids and with everybody else, where the different ideas of how we can relate, for example, to privacy could be distributed on a very large scale and become understandable to other people. So I took an interview and published it in Russian media from the David Staten, one of my friends in Berlin. And so he was telling in this interview that if we will have certain percentage of people, not even big, who will use encryption in their private communication, it will be too expensive for government to spy on us. And the question is, why it didn't happen? So why we don't use encryption in this amount of people? Why don't we all just join the crowd? And one thinks is encryption is complicated to use, but actually, probably it's not a wrong answer. It's the real answer is that's how we understand our collectivity, that we don't need to use encryption, so that our privacy is not really so important to protect. And so coming back to the children, Soviet children literature, I think these guys were very effective in a way distribute the revolutionary ideas among this vast hundreds of millions of people that were living in Russian Empire in 1917 after revolution had happened, and they immediately after the Soviet Revolution introduced woman equality, like the social equality. They accommodate this huge amount of people who came from villages during the Civil War and give them job and feed them. And the basic rights in the early Soviet Union was preserved. So like in the privacy book, I'm going to speak as in one of the experts. I'm going to speak with Mikhail Kosinski. He's this guy from Cambridge Psychometrics. It's a company. It's a, not company. It's a part of the university that later became a model for Cambridge Analytica, the company that created a software that apparently was used for the Brexit election political campaign and for the election of Trump. And so Mikhail Kosinski was, after he created his program of getting information from social network on a big scale about people. He was going around and warning that it could be used for like very harmful things. So he's saying that I didn't build the bomb. I just show that it could be built, could be harmful. And yeah, so I was thinking that maybe here in the Congress I can find also somebody who will participate in some ways of making this privacy book more like better, in maybe giving its different form, not being a book, but being some kind of small piece of software they can distribute through the social network, and then the people not only can answer this question, that's what Kosinski did originally, but they can see the answers. For example, if they see that, I wouldn't care about my privacy, I wouldn't spend time encrypting my email, and then he will see, okay, if like 20% of the people will answer, I will, then no civilians, and if like 13% of people will answer, we don't care, then yes, civilians everywhere. So maybe something like that could work. Yeah, maybe that's it.
Nika Dubrovsky, time, thank you. That was great. Actually, I have a first question, and I would love to see some other questions here as well. First, a practical thing. I understood that the next lecture will not go through, so we have some more time to discuss and maybe find that collaborators that you were looking for. One practical question. You did some sessions with kids to book?
Not for privacy yet. Not for privacy yet. It was other books, like Crime and Punishment and protest books, some other books. Yeah. Family.
Okay. On a small scale, and in Berlin or before in New York, where you were staying?
Where the workshops were done, and the workshop is a big, important part. So you kind of, it's an important to look at the kids eye to eye, not just to impose on them some knowledge, but then to make them, allow them to draw and write, and then maybe introduce something in the book. So I did a project in Russia, and the protest book is for South Africa. And yes, I did two workshops in Berlin.
Okay, so that was my next question. What is your audience? Because before this lecture, you told me like we are all kids still, in a way.
Yeah, it's mean like kids are mature. Yeah, so I will be described how to encrypt my email. I will be much less capable than my 14 years old son.
Okay.
Sure.
You have this little kid there in the back that I heard that would be joining your party next to all the other kids here. is there someone who has a question for Nika? Guys? Girls? Androids? Bots? Someone there on the web? No one. Okay, then I have to come up with another question. How do we use that book? When is it there? When it will be published? It's open source, I understood.
Yeah, we just put it on WikiKids, WikiDo, and then... Yeah,
where can we find this? Yes.
It's a website where you can download it, but we also put it on WikiKids. The website is a4kids.org.
a4kids.org,
yeah. For like
dot
org.
Org, okay. So my question was then, when can we see this?
When this book will be done, hope like 3 months.
In 3 months, something like that. Other people here who would like to collaborate, probably will connect you after this lecture. No one here has a question.
I feel guilty.
Oh my God! Hey, thank you very much, Nika. Once again, I hope to talk later with you.